and welcome to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing nonprofits, social justice, and activism, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I am your host, Ethan Clow, and joining me on the show, we have my former co-host from Radio Freethinker, Don McElhenigan. Hello, Don.
Hello, Ethan. How are you? And I like to start off by thanking you for coming on my show, my last episode, where we got into some of the things I think we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great fun. So this is sort of a two-parter episode. And if you want to listen to the first part of our discussion, check out Radio Freethinker. And that was on Tuesdays at 3 o'clock. And the website, of course, is radiofreethinker.com. Well, Don, it's great to have you on The Sector. So last week, I posed the big question. Is Bill Gates right about these poverty myths? That poor countries are doomed to stay poor? That foreign aid is a big waste, and that saving lives leads to overpopulation. And as an extended question, Bill made the claim that charity is indeed working. The world has become a better place thanks to the kind of work his organization is doing. So what do we all think about that? Don, you looked over the article, you took a look at the videos. What would you say about our big question of the week?
So I think, again, we tend to sit there and we see the really bad nations. We see the Afghanistans where things are really horrible. But we miss things like the Kenyas and, you know, even Egypt, you know, where things have improved quite a bit. And ironically enough, as we sort of send in this charity and we help things out, we reduce the amount of population growth. I mean, if you think about it logically, and this is where logic sometimes fails, if you have families that are like six or seven children and more of those children tend to survive, you figure, wow, that means that that population is just going to explode. But actually what seems to happen is that as more and more children survive, parents sit there and say, hey, hell, we don't need to have as much children. And as aid agencies go in there and they give women more choice with contraceptive and that sort of thing, that actually you get a decrease as more and more aid goes into places like Africa.
Right. And like looking at that article, Bill Gates, you know, I mean, he's obviously got a certain bias in the way that he wants to do charity. It's a very sort of pro-capitalist viewpoint that the best way to help these people is through investments, to bring them on board with the rest of the world in terms of entrepreneurship and innovation and markets. Now, granted, he's seen a lot of success. And I think that someone like Bill Gates has, you know, for someone who's a rich billionaire and has made his fortune through capitalism, he's done a fairly impressive job of giving back and actually encouraging other people to give back. But what did you make on his central point that the best way of fixing this problem is sort of more capitalism?
Yeah, see, again, one of the problems I have in general with sort of the philanthropic movement is it takes one person's ideology and imposes it on various places. So I don't know if capitalism is the right fit for something like Ethiopia, which has a very different culture, or Nigeria, which has a very different culture. I mean, he's using the tools that he knows, and I give him credit for that, right? But in doing so, he's also promoting a particular ideology that may or may not get local buy-in. I mean, we talked about that before, that you know, in order for a true NGO to succeed in an area, it just can't be top-driven. It actually has to be bottom-up. And, you know, I don't know. I don't want to rehash the whole, you know, marketplace of charities. But Bill Gates is trying to improve the world, and he's done things, you know, like he's donated lots of money to toilets around the parts of the world, and toilets apparently are a really big thing. But why not schools, or why not invest in some other cooperative ideas? But instead, he's investing it into, as you say, these sort of market-driven solutions, and I'm not sure if that's the best fit everywhere. It's going to be a good fit some places, but not everywhere. It's not only exporting charity, but ideology, and that's where I start to have some issues.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned the thing about toilets. I've noticed, too, that it's almost like there's sort of waves of ways that we think will fix the world. And a lot of times, you know, in the early 80s, we were looking at things like just, you know, feed the hungry, provide food, provide funds, donate to this cause, donate to that cause. But as we went through, we started to sort of focus in, zero in on certain specific things. And sanitation, as one of those factors, has really grown in sort of leaps and bounds. You know, Bill Gates in his thing about toilets and clean drinking water, you know, even Matt Damon has his own foundation that deals exclusively with finding clean water for people. And we talked about the whole wells problem on Radio Free Thinker. What do you think about this kind of hyper-isolation on specific causes? Do you think that it's better to sort of have an organization that's only purpose is to go into these countries and build toilets versus an organization that's going to, say, build a school or invest in stable economies or invest in stable government or something like that?
Well, again, I think this points out to another weakness to this, right, is that, you know, instead of having sort of a couple of rich white guys going around the world saying, hey, this is what we need to do, and that somehow seems very sort of medieval to me, but there's no overall sort of arching plan. You have a bunch of flashpoints here and there, but they all have to weave together to a certain degree in order for it to be truly successful. I think one of the problems we find in Africa, and why it sometimes doesn't seem like we're not making as much success as we could, and I don't think we're making as much success as we could, is that we're doing it hodgepodge, and you have sort of certain degrees of elements working against each other. I mean, there's a lot of charity going into places like Uganda for religion to help fight the gays. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I think that's something that's making Uganda a better place to live. In fact, I'm sure it's making a much worse place to live. But because there's no sort of overarching plan or even coordinator, that you get these sort of things going awry. And I think that's where things like the United Nations should actually be the central clearinghouse for these efforts, because they can provide sort of an overarching plan that not only do we need to improve the toilets, but we also need to help the education and some political stability. And these three things are weaving together to try and reinforce themselves.
Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, let's be honest, Don, the UN do anything coordinated? Don't be silly.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all part of their Agenda 51 or whatever it is, 41, I think it is, for world domination. Read your Illuminati, Ethan.
Well, it's on my to-do list. Well, why don't we take a quick break here on the sector? When we come back, we're going to dive into specifically the question of cause and mission and what makes Canadians tick when it comes to donating to charity.
Gee, your station has a lot of problems.
Tell me about it. Just look at our morning guy.
Hello, this is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you. Today, part four of our series of the agonizing pain in which I live every day.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, not the home of Mole Men in the Morning.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
And we're back on The Sector with our guest, Don McLennigan from Radio Freethinker. So we're talking about causes and missions, and specifically, what causes and missions do Canadians like? What do we support here in this country? Well, let's start off with a bit of context. When the nonprofit sector started out, the primary form of charity was religiously motivated. In fact, many people still think of charities as operating out of a church basement with grandma is sending out donation requests. And admittedly, that still happens in certain sectors and certain organizations, which is kind of interesting because Stats Canada has data that indicates that religious people donate more to charity than the non-religious. To quote the article, in 2010, 93% of them, religious people, had given money to one or more charitable or nonprofit organizations. Their annual donation was $1,004. In comparison, 83% of donors who attended church less often or not at all had donated on their average annual donation $313. So it seems like the religious people are just way more generous. So, Don, I know you have a thought, you have an opinion on that one.
What? Me? Opinion on religion? Yeah, well, so again, I'm kind of curious to know if we could drill down on these numbers a little bit more, and I'm not sure if we can, but how much of this donations to religious charities are for the religion itself, you know, maintenance of the church building, that sort of thing? I mean, don't get me wrong, that does sort of qualify as a nonprofit and a charity, but it somehow seems more self-serving than if I give money to, I don't know, the university or home development or something like that, or a food kitchen even, right? So I agree that, you know, the numbers say that religious people donate a lot more, but aren't they really kind of donating mostly to themselves?
Well, it's an interesting question because religious donations could include everything from the collection plate to your church doing a bake sale to raise money for X cause. And that's sort of where things get a little bit fuzzy, I think, is because some religions, some churches raise money that doesn't actually go to the church. It's utilizing it as a network to raise money for UNICEF or the Red Cross or whatever cause is out there. What's interesting, though, is that religious organizations actually sort of suck in as much as 40% of the total donations in Canada. So the way that factors out is that of the $10.6 billion that Canadians donate, and this is from 2010, $4.26 billion was given to religious organizations. Now, it might be more accurate to say that it was given through religious organizations, because that money may have been redistributed through other organizations and causes. A good example might be United Way, which is a fairly secular organization, but it's still religious. It's still religiously funded, but it does a lot of secular work, as in feeding the hungry, providing employment and shelter, that sort of thing. But they don't necessarily operate out of a church.
Well, you get things too, like the Salvation Army and soup kitchens, right?
Exactly.
Actually, I find I guess it's disturbing. I'm not quite sure that the percentage of donations to religion is twice that we give to health. So we spend a lot more to keep the church running than trying to cure cancer.
Well, you know, and one of the reasons why I mentioned sort of the beginning of charity in Canada was that I think religion had sort of an unfair head start on this. Culturally, Western society has always sort of said that giving to charity and helping, you know, the poor people, that's not the duty of government. That's not the duty of the king. That's not the duty of the private citizen. That's God's work, you know. And if you want to give to charity, go to your local church and, you know, sprinkle some cold coins in their, you know, little basket so that they can get some bread and water for the lower classes. And I think that mentality has stuck around in our society. We assume that the, you know, job of the church is to provide spiritual guidance to people and do everything else in society that no one else wants to do, which is help people who are in trouble. Now, I think in reality, that's changed so much that religious organizations are also busy putting on, you know, Christian rock festivals and using their money to fund like multi-million dollar breakfasts on Ottawa so that they can influence policymakers. And that's also breaking charity law, by the way. But that's sort of the activities that churches are getting into right now. And granted that I think a lot of us, maybe not me or Don, but a lot of people still kind of assume that religious charity is all about doing the things that nobody else in society is doing.
Actually, I might push back or rearrange your history a little bit. I think charities, the first charities, the first sort of things were actually community-based, and they were focused on the church, not because they were run by the church, but it was the one sort of central figure. But it was very much community-based. Then that really devolved as we had the Industrial Revolution, and a lot of these communities were literally destroyed. It was at that point that the churches really became, they had to pick up the ground because government still wasn't doing it. And they had the money and they were involved in the new communities in the bigger cities. And they provided the hospitals and that sort of thing. And they still have this sort of historical, what's the word, holdover that they are these, you know, bringers of social services. But really, I think if you break it down, we give a lot of money to NGOs, but most of our sort of charity work is actually done by the government these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at the sort of the big causes that Canadians like, and I'll arrange this in order of what we give to most and then down to the least. So the biggest one that Canadians care about is health, and that's not too surprising. We give a huge percentage of our donations to health organizations, health foundations, and the like. The next big thing is social services, which is sort of a catch-all term, but that could go to everything from social justice, feeding the hungry, looking after people who are homeless, that sort of thing. And then religion comes next. And again, as we've been sort of been saying, there's sort of an amount of crossover going on with some of these things, so it's difficult to tease out exactly what's for what. But after religion comes education and research, which is something that I think Canadians do value quite a bit. Investing in educational resources, universities have become some of the biggest employers of fundraising and investment in Canada, as well as research, which I suppose could go into anything like health, but also buying new equipment for your university, buying new equipment for high schools. And then finally, hospitals, which you might think, well, shouldn't that be sort of lumped in with health? But for the most part, hospitals tend to be a bit separate from the health donation pyramid, although there is, again, overlap because hospitals are often where these health foundations operate out of.
Well, yeah, and that actually, again, we send the things that we have socialized medicine, and we don't. We have socialized insurance, and that most of the hospitals probably in this province are not actually government-run, but they're run by, you know, the Ladies of St. Francis or something. It's the actual administrators are not government administrators, but they're actually sort of, nonprofit administrators.
Exactly. So, Don, I mean, like, looking at these causes, what strikes you in particular about them? Because, I mean, this is what Canadians have, by and large, for you know, the last couple of decades, shown us repeatedly that they care about the most. There's some notable missing causes there.
There's the idea of, you know, environmentalism, right? Which I don't think would call it social services, right? I mean, there's the David Suzuki Foundation or Greenpeace and all that seem to be doing a lot of important things, but we don't seem to think that they're important enough to really fund, or is that kind of thing?
Well, not only that, but I mean, the focus a lot that we've been hearing about is advocacy, civil liberties, human rights, and yet totally absent from the top five. It seems like, you know, Canadians are not putting those very high priorities.
I think too, though, and I think we may have talked about this before, there's a big difference between what Canadians are giving to charities and how much charities are getting. I was reading one of the stats that, like I say, over 50% of funding for NGOs and nonprofits actually come from federal grants or government grants of one form or another. And that might actually be what's skewing these numbers a little bit. Because again, if you think about something like Native Rights or Aboriginal Improvement, those would be done as sort of as a nonprofit entity. But they wouldn't be getting money from you or me. They'd be getting money from the federal government. So how does that play into this sort of mix that really we have almost, I don't want to say competing, it doesn't quite seem right, but we have a set of NGOs that having to hustle the government for money, and you have another set of NGOs that are trying to hustle the Canadian people for money, and they have very different sort of aims and points of view.
Well, the other thing too is the competition factor between these organizations and even within the various categories. You know, one of the examples that I think about a lot is something like the BC Lung Foundation. Still, one of the oldest charities in Canada, does amazing work, has great people involved, and yet they don't fundraise a fraction of what BC Children's Hospital fundraises, or a fraction of what the Cancer Society fundraises. It seems like Canadians even have like a pecking order within these various categories of things that we consider important, things that we invest in. And one has to wonder if perhaps governments and the public are doubling up too much on individual causes.
Well, you know, again, it depends on where you see the focus. I mean, I could see something like cancer research is one of these areas where, you know, the government will spend money via the universities for research, but then they also have a lot of campaigning for people to say, hey, help pay for the research. And that does seem to be a certain degree of redundancy. But yeah, I mean, do we really want our social safety net beyond the government to be set up by a popularity poll? I mean, I think one of the reasons why the health is such a high instigator isn't so much that we have a lot of, you know, health needs in Canada. Don't get me wrong, cystic fibrosis and all those other bad diseases should be dealt with. But really, one of the biggest problems we have in this nation is poverty, and poverty leads to a lot of the other health issues. But it's not as it's not marketed as well as the Pink Run for Cancer or what have you. And that's where, again, this capitalist or this business model of charities has its really big issue, is that if I'm sitting there and I'm just trying to out-market my competitors, and my competitors in this case are other NGOs, I'm not necessarily doing what's best for the nation. I'm not doing what's best for the community. I'm sort of doing what's best for me, all right, because I'm the CEO of this, so I want to make more money, and I want my NGO to be more get more fundraising. And so you might get something where something like a cure for baldness will get a lot more money than something for a cure for malaria, just because you happen to be a better marketer than me. And in this market-based charity model that we seem to be promoting, that's, again, just strikes me somehow wrong.
Well, one of the aspects about causes and missions is how they're supported by sort of cohorts of Canadians. And we sort of divide Canadians up into generations. So we have sort of the civic generation, which, we think of them as the generation that lived through World War II. We have the baby boomers, who obviously came after World War II. We have Gen X and the newest generation, Gen Y. And when we look at the causes that these individual generations actually support, it's kind of interesting to see how progress is being made. So for instance, the civics tend to support social services about 36%, religious about 40%, and health about 55%. Now,
I think it's important to put that into a context, too. So these people are the people that, you know, would have known about the war and would have known about the Depression, if not directly, then indirectly. And I think that may have tainted or skewed why they think social services is such an important thing, because they lived in a time when you didn't have these social services.
Exactly. And conversely, advocacy is only supported about 3% by the civics, environment by 10%, and education 10%. So you can sort of see where their priorities are sitting. Now, when you look at the boomers, for instance, they support health about 50% of the time, children's charities about 38% of the time, social services about 31% of the time, and religious charities 23% of the time. So you can already see a pretty big difference. They're basically supporting religious organizations about half as much. They're a little less on the health. Children's charities are a big deal for boomers. And social services are, you know, about the same. And again, we can see that they also don't really value advocacy, environment, or education. Those three factors are about 2, 8, and 6% each. So we're still seeing very similar trends generation to generation. Now, Gen X, you see health at 50%, children's at about 40%, social services about 31%. You know, religion has kind of dropped off the list a bit there. And then for Gen Y, the newest generation, health at around 45%, children at around 32%, social services around 21%. And interestingly enough, 13% for human rights, international development. So a gain in that category that you didn't see in the previous generations.
I wonder how much of that, too, is the idea, I don't know, you know, the youth are very much more idealistic. And I wonder maybe the Gen Xers, when they were, you know, teenagers or 20-somethings, whether they would have been for equal rights or something like that.
Yeah, and it does, I think, raise interesting questions about how we're learning about causes in society. You know, I've heard it said that one of the reasons why Canadians invest so much in health in terms of charity is that it's kind of like insurance. If we give to cancer research, maybe by the time that we're old, there'll be a cure for cancer. And I'm wondering if that's one of the factors that is impacting, say, the boomers and the Gen Xers when it comes to something like children's charities. We invest in these things so that on the off chance that we ever need those services, they'll be well funded for us. Which raises the question of, when the heck is environment going to kick in?
when we're swimming in Richmond, that's when it's going to kick in.
Yeah, well, I mean, so overall, things that have stayed low priority for pretty much every demographic include the environment, the arts, election campaigns, advocacy, and there's a, you know, about a dozen other ones there that I didn't bother listing. But I mean, it does give you an idea that Canadians as a whole were not as concerned about the environment. We certainly don't seem to care much about the arts. And advocacy, which is, I always thought was a really important thing that Canadians would care about, consistently has been fairly low.
Well, I think part of that might play into, I mean, like, let's look at some of the positives of this, right? Education is low, maybe because people feel, hey, education doesn't need it because we have good enough education. And, you know, the environment, you know, one of the perhaps bonuses of being a resource-based economy is we don't have a lot of factories polluting up our airs or as much as we might have otherwise. So maybe people, again, they don't see it as a big issue by and large, although, again, climate change, guys, we're in for it. But advocacy, again, I can't help but feel that people think that's not a me issue, that's a government issue. I mean, we are, or at least we were, very much, you know, socialistic sort of in our leanings, and that's not something that we should really be worried about. Maybe that's what that's playing into.
Well, another interesting factor is within the last, like, 5 years, we've seen a dramatic rise in terms of civil liberties awareness. And I think a really good example of this is when a local nonprofit launched here called Open Media, and they focused on media freedom, internet freedom, civil liberties, privacy concerns, that sort of thing. They fundraised a huge amount of money without even trying, more money than they knew what to do with. And it was a shock for everybody. I mean, it sent ripples throughout the entire nonprofit sector that all of a sudden, in the last 5 years, Canadians got really worried about things like online privacy and civil liberties. And there's been some high-profile situations going on that I think may have spurred this on to a certain extent. I mean, this is sort of the Facebook generation. We've seen how online privacy affects people. We're learning more and more about how what we put online is actually really vulnerable information. And I mean, you know, the Heartbleed bug, for instance, is a good example of how we're actually not all that secure online. And throw into the equation the debates over metered internet of Google and Facebook and Twitter sort of knowing everything that we do and all these other factors, mobile data, for instance, being kind of harvested, not to mention the sort of rampant spying that's going on by the NSA and everybody else. So I think you have a lot of really sort of worried people, and I'm wondering what this will do for charity giving in the next 5-10 years.
That's a really interesting question, and I think, you know, another weird thing, and you see this maybe in the Gen Y, and maybe I'm going to backtrack a little bit about the 13% that they give to, you know, human rights and international development, is we are a much more connected society than we were before. I mean, you were pointing out the negative sides, and I think as we become more and more aware of our digital self, that issues of digital privacy and of security online becomes more. I mean, right now in the United States, a really huge issue is the striking down of net neutrality. Now that you have sort of fast lanes and slow lanes of the internet, which will really hamper not only innovation sort of in a business sense of the word, but it allows people who have the money to propagate their ideas a lot faster or easier than other people. And on the same note, or in perhaps in the opposite vein, is we are much more aware of stuff that's going on, like in Egypt right now, where they just had a mass sentencing of 500 and some odd people to the death sentence for basically political crimes. And being in touch with all that changes the way we see the world. I think we're heading for a huge shift of what we think are sort of major important charities and NGOs to support. I think things like health are always going to be important, and social services are always going to be kind of important because they're close to home. But what is close to home is becoming much bigger now. It's expanding. We have, you know, the global village is actually becoming more than just a catchphrase. It's actually becoming a real thing.
Well, and to sort of add on to that, we're going to also have to see if Gen Y and the newer generations who are, you know, concerned about these sort of things and are invested in the global village, will they even have the resources to donate? We're still sort of getting ourselves out of a recession here. And, you know, it's no secret that the charitable sector is kind of quite a big hit in the last recession. And there's not, it's not a coincidence that terms like slacktivism have been thrown out there and referred to almost exclusively by sort of the online generation of people liking things on Facebook and sharing stories, as opposed to, you know, taking out your wallet and making a donation. It's also not a coincidence that Gen Y is one of the most hard hit. I mean, we have a lot of people who are well educated, have good jobs or good career opportunities, but simply can't find those career opportunities right now. And so we get this notion that, well, Gen Y cares about these things, but when they get the cash, will that translate into support?
Yes. I guess time will tell. But you mentioned something there that I want to jump on, because one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to make a case against philanthropy. I mean, that there's, we talked already about sort of the logistical or logical things that can go against it, but there's one point that I think is almost philosophical about it, and you pointed to this, can they afford to do it? I mean, one of the problems I have with someone like Bill Gates, who gives away billions for that, which is good on him, but why does he have the billions in the first place? I think me and you were talking before that nations that have a sort of a stronger safety net tend not to be as big at giving to charities, because again, they sort of find there's less need to. And you can kind of make a correlation that in societies that have greater inequality, there's a lot more charities. I was talking to someone from the States who we were talking about the healthcare issue. And they said, well, we really don't need to worry about healthcare in the United States, because if you don't have money, there's always going to be a charity or a church or something that's going to pony up the money. And that leads into, I think, another aspect of this sort of where does the money go to, or what does it, what's the real root of some of these problems? And a lot of it is going to be inequality. I mean, why do we have to have children's charities? Because things are going bad for children. There's abuse or there's something else wrong. Why do we need social services? Again, because there are failures in our social safety net, and the population in general has to come in and fill these gaps. And I think a lot of that can be put at the feet of the growing inequality that we're experiencing here in this nation.
Well, yeah. And so the question then, of course, is how can we start to address the root causes of these problems?
Revolution.
Yeah. Well, revolution is expensive, Don.
No, well, and you point out to another thing, too, and I think this will be the great leveler in sort of a depressing sort of way, is climate change, right? As climate change becomes more and more of an issue, it will be more and more of an issue. I think, again, the Gen Yers and I guess Gen Zers would be the next ones. This mitigating climate change is going to become a much more active part of their life. So in the same way that, you know, everyone kind of knows someone who's had cancer, that's why cancer charities get a lot of money. Everyone's going to know someone who lost their home because of a flooding or a tornado or some other climactic event. And money to help mitigate climate change will probably increase as the generations go on. But how do you change that? You need more money to go into civics. You know, one of the things I loved about the early communist and union movements, and we're talking over 100 years ago, sort of pre-Lenin, is that they would go to workers, where workers worked, and they would educate them. They would teach them about, you know, what are your rights? How does politics work? Just basic education, reading and writing. And we've sort of given up on that whole idea of becoming civically minded. And I think if we become better civic entities, if we become better citizens, our ability to direct and to use charities in a more effective way won't be so much the, hey, look over there, that's a great charity, look at the flashy lights, but it'll be, oh yes, I kind of know about this issue, and I think this would be a better charity to give to.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting thoughts there, Don. Why don't we take a quick break here on the show? When we come back, we will have Don's final thoughts on charity as well as his pitch of the week, and we'll introduce our new big question. So stay tuned, folks.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Well, how best to explain it? You've seen me in X-Men.
Yeah.
The character I am, Professor Charles Xavier. Mm. If you remember, he can control things with the power of his mind, can make people do things and see things. So I thought, what if you can do that for real? I mean, not in a comic book world, but in the real world.
All right.
So in my film, I play a man who controls the world with his mind.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah. For instance, I'm walking along, and I see this beautiful girl, and I think I'd like to see her naked, and so all her clothes fall off.
All her clothes fall off?
Mm, yes. And she's scrabbling around to get them back on again, but even before she can get her knickers on, I've seen everything. You know, I've seen it all.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. We've already seen everything.
Okay. It's a comedy, is it?
No.
And we're back on The Sector. So, Don, thank you so much for joining us here and sharing your thoughts on charities and nonprofits. It's time for our favorite segment, that is the pitch of the week. And this is where we ask our guests for their elevator pitch for a charity or cause of their choice. So Don, imagine that you're out and about and you corner a billionaire and you have 30 seconds to a minute of their time and you want to convince them to donate to a cause or something that you think is really important. What would you say to them?
I would point them towards Open Media, openmedia.ca. We talked just a few minutes ago about how we're becoming more and more aware of our digital selves and how important the internet and telecommunications have become an integral part of our society, our community, and really the future of humanity going forward. Well, Open Media sits there and they try and promote things like net neutrality. They sit there and they fight against things like when you have our major telecoms, our cell phone companies that are gouging us for extra money, our cable companies that are gouging us for money for poor internet service, for poor phone service. They push back on things like privacy, where the government has several times tried to pass laws that would allow intrusive interventions into our digital lives and into our homes. Well, they push back against that. They provide active active activism. Sure. They provide active activism against, you know, these particular things, and they make people aware. Lots of times you wouldn't even be know about what's going on if it wasn't something like Open Media and openmedia.ca. I think it's a nonprofit, it's worthy, it's engaging, it educates, and it empowers. And that would be my pitch of the week.
Well, excellent, Don. Thanks for that. And, you know, on to the big question of the week for another time here on The Sector. We've talked a lot about causes this week, things that matter to Canadians and what different generations consider important. That leads us to ask, do we have our priorities in order? There are so many potential things that we Canadians should be focused on and investing in. So this week's big question is, do Canadians need to rethink their priorities for charity? So far, Canadians have shown repeatedly that we care about health, social services, kids, and religion. Yet, there's been little love for the environment, human rights, civil liberties, and advocacy. If we do shake up our values, what will the cost be? Do we want to start neglecting health, social services, kids, and religion? So, again, there's probably no right answer to this question, but we are interested in your feedback, and you can participate in the big question. You can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/sectorpodcast. You can tweet us on Twitter. We are on Sector Podcast, or you can contact me on Twitter at Ethan Clow. And of course, visit us online at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com to read our show notes and download the podcast.
I would almost add, perhaps as one of your big questions or priority, if we need to rethink, why do we need to rethink? What has gone wrong with our thinking about charity, and how would you change it?
Yes, indeed. I mean, that's a good point because, as we mentioned on Radio Freethinker, there's been certainly a lot of progress in Canada. We've lowered the poverty rates across the country by significant margins, but there are still a lot of sticking points. I mean, we've made a pretty big impact in terms of our big cities, in terms of the majority of our population. However, we've barely scratched the surface when it comes to things like poverty amongst Native peoples in Canada. In fact, if anything, it's getting a lot worse. We've barely scratched the surface when it comes to things like clean drinking water and sanitation in Canada's more remote areas. It's great living here in Vancouver, but what about the rest of the country where things aren't all that rosy and beautiful and pretty? So there certainly are areas where we can make a bigger impact happen. And like, what do you all think about that? What the question again is, do we need to keep investing in hospitals here in Vancouver, or maybe it's time to spread that wealth around and start seeing that investment in Canada's north and the interior of BC, in Native communities? Or perhaps maybe we need to shift our boundaries internationally and start looking at other countries, start looking at ways that we can have an impact on the global community. So again, we encourage your feedback, and there are no wrong answers here in The Sector. We just want to engage with your opinions.
Sorry. yes.
So Don, we do appreciate you being here. Why don't you remind our listeners, if they want to learn more about you and hear you talk more, where would they go?
They would go to radiofreethinker.com. They could check us out on iTunes. We are on Twitter at CITRRFT. And you can listen to me more or less live on CITR 101.9 FM Tuesdays at 3 o'clock. It's an hour show. And my God, we cover everything. And it's a really interesting show. You'll learn some stuff. And hopefully you'll hear Ethan on the show again as we come up with some interesting cross-pollinating conversations.
Yeah, you know me, Donna. I just love my, I love hearing myself talk, frankly. I mean, why else would I have started another show? But, in all serious note, we do appreciate you stopping by, Don.
This is Don saying, eyes open, mind's on.
Well, we have reached the end of another episode here on The Sector. This was our sixth episode. Very good. I'm very pleased to see that the show is catching on and that so many people are liking us on Facebook and following along with the show. For episode 7, which is coming up next week, we'll be getting back to discussing more sector-related content. For instance, we'll be having an interview with David LePage. We'll be discussing social enterprise. And what is social enterprise, you might ask? Well, as we all know, that the Canadian nonprofit sector is one of the three pillars of our society. Government, the for-profit sector, and the nonprofit sector. These three foundations make up pretty much everything financially related to our civilization. But there's a new emerging sector called the social enterprise sector. This is a for-profit based organization that has as its mandate a desire to do good in community and society. So what does that even mean? When you do well financially as a for-profit business, your goal is to see that profit redistributed to the shareholders, and the other staff, exec, and ultimately post a profit. For the nonprofit sector, of course, the goal isn't to maximize profits, it's to do good, to do a mission, a cause, to make the world a better place. So the social enterprise sector says, well, wait a minute, maybe we can do both. Maybe we can have a blended return on investment. We can make a positive impact in society, in our communities, building things, providing resources, providing opportunities for growth and economic development. But we can also provide a business that functions, that makes money, so that shareholders do get a small return on investment, so that the community and the local economy benefits, but also that staff and employees or volunteers are being looked after. That this isn't a vow of poverty that we would impose on, say, a nonprofit, but rather this is about making enough money to live and at the same time doing good with it. So an example might be a charity that operates a coffee shop. Or it could be a business that invests locally in its community with perhaps a community garden, or an organization that encourages entrepreneurial investment. Either way, it's a new, exciting idea. And we're not really sure what direction it's going to go, or ultimately what its effect will be on society. Ultimately, will this replace nonprofits, or maybe it will supplement them? Or maybe it will encourage more investment by local businesses to become more community-based, to become more engaged with society and less focused on making profit. Already, we have seen some major changes in how businesses operate within the community. With the advent of Generation Y and younger people entering the workforce, we're finding that their desires are not simply to make profit or have a great salary or even to have benefits and vacation time. They want to make sure that whatever it is they're doing is having a positive impact on society. They want to see an organization that's giving back, that's reinvesting their good fortune. So we've already seen big corporations that do this. Many corporations involve themselves in charitable activities, charitable donations. They engage in runs for charity. They engage in fundraising efforts for fighting disease, for raising money for children's hospitals. They create foundations and they make donations to schools and other community groups. Many of them invest in the business that they actually do and use those skills to help others. Technology foundations will invest in technology for schools. Organizations that do carpentry or build things will donate their services so that a charity can have its office refurbished. These are the sort of things that we expect to see from businesses. Now, that certainly has changed over the years. And with the rise of social enterprise, we may be expecting to see this a whole lot more. So be sure to tune into The Sector next week, Fridays at 8 a.m., our usual time here on CITR. And join us for our interview with David LePage. If you have any ideas, questions, or thoughts that you want to send to us for that episode, feel free to tweet us at Sector Podcast or at me, Ethan Clow. Let us know what your thoughts will be on this subject. And again, of course, we will have a brand new question of the week for next week's show, episode 7. Can you believe we're only a few episodes away from reaching our 10-episode anniversary? That's quite exciting, I have to say. I'm very pleased to see us making it that far. To all of your listeners out there and all of our listeners here, thank you for tuning into The Sector. We will see you next week. And this is Ethan, your host on The Sector, saying see you later.
It's gonna be